In this episode of The One White Teacher, it is my very happy honor to share a conversation with Asada Moore. Asada is that rare, gifted, and generous educator who is uncommonly successful at helping students enjoy the power of mathematics to make life in school and beyond successful and rewarding. In 2017, Asada retired from her district-level position at the University of Chicago's Urban Education Institute. Before that position, Asada spent 5 years as a high school principal. Asada has traveled the world teaching other teachers how to teach mathematics, physics, and engineering in ways that fully engage students of all ages. In 2009, under the Obama administration, Asada received the Presidential Award for Excellence in Mathematics and Science Teaching. My name is Nene White. I was a teacher for over 20 years, and now I am the one white teacher of this podcast, seeking out meaningful conversations with Black people so that all of us can, little by little, know each other better, so that we can undo the miseducation that has plagued us with racist policies and systems that divide us and that really only hurt all of us. Thank you for sharing these learning experiences with me. Oh, and be sure to check out the show's notes for a very, very special offer from Asada. You'll want to see that and learn about it during the show. Okay, good. Thanks. Asada Moore, thank you for your time. I'm in awe of what you are bringing into the world and specifically to Black children, but to all children, really.
Yes.
As it relates to math. I mean, I'm one of those people that when you say math, the tears start to flow. Literally, just very pathetic. Get me away.
Goodness.
And I have watched your online classes, many of them. I've watched you tutor kids.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Oh, my God. And it's just like my brain went from so constricted to just, oh, of course. Thank you for opening that window and those doors. Mm-hmm. And so, from the class that I just watched yesterday, actually, I really purposely took notes because I knew that I was going to have this conversation with you.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about the different things that I observed about how you interacted with the kids and how the kids responded to you and the kinds of results that happened in 1 hour with at least a dozen kids online.
Yes.
And what were the... what was the age range yesterday? It was kind of young.
That group was third through fifth grade.
Okay.
Yes, third through fifth for that group.
And all levels of kids.
Yes. Yes, all levels.
Yeah. And so did you, and some kids were fairly confident and a lot of them were extremely shy. And
yes.
Did you get the impression that they were there of their own free will or they had a lot of coaxing from parents or?
Some of them are, because some of them repeat, they come back each week. And then some of them, they also will join, like they'll jump on again tonight, even though they're not in that age group.
I'm going to be there too.
Yeah. It's a good combination of both, actually. Yeah.
Okay. But then the shy ones or the reticent ones, it's not being lost on them because they see how your patience.
Yes.
Enables kids to get those connections in their own timing and in their own ways.
Yes.
In their own unique ways.
Yeah, you saw the one kid last night, you see how he starts his problem. He says line.
Yeah.
And then he tells you the operation and then he works the numbers from the bottom to the top, right?
Right, left to right.
Yes.
It was incredible. And I was just like, what is going on? And you were just sitting there and taking his instructions so you could help him.
Yeah.
And then you called his parent.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what you were thinking when you called the parent and how you instructed the parent for everyone who's paying attention to this podcast now.
Yeah. And so what happens is, and parents do this, teachers do this, you know, just adults in general. we want things to fit our paradigm and our algorithm the way that we did it. And what I wanted his parent to understand, because when I first started working with him, that young kid, he was on the very first session. The confidence wasn't as strong. And just after a few sessions, it is. And so what I wanted his parents to understand is that he's going to take in information, process it, and give it back differently. And different doesn't mean wrong, right? And right now, with the society that we live in, if you're not doing things the way that another party or another group of people want you to do something, then we're almost to the point where we just hate you for it, right?
Yeah.
And so I want children to understand that it's okay to be different in many different ways, even with your learning style. And I wanted him to be confident and comfortable with the way that he was presenting problems. And too many times, students and people that have special needs, we want them to adjust to us.
Yeah.
As opposed to us trying to figure out and adjust it, which will make it better for everyone, right? You can do the back and forth. So that was the reason behind that. And also teaching parents the patience as well, because there have been some times where I'm working with a student, a parent would be like that. And I hear the parent, I have to tell a parent, no, give them time, let them think about it, right? Problems, when you think about great people that solve problems, problems can go on for years and years and years that you're trying to figure out. We're on iPhone 13 right now. They didn't get it all figured out in the first one. Right. And it's been over a decade since the phone has been out. So allow children the time to process and to think about things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved your, because we would just be sitting there and you would ask the child a question that, you know, my mind could do 2 times 2. I could do that one.
Yeah.
And the way you would sit there, it was like we were all sitting there with you. So there was the lesson in that. I think I'm sharing all of this with the people that are participating in this podcast, because I highly recommend that people tune into any online offerings that you have, because there's so much to learn on so many levels and layers and dimensions, you know? And yes, to watch that child.
Yes.
And to wait and to watch you, Asana.
Yes.
Because I can feel that you're not going, you're just, what's happening inside you? I really wanted to ask you that. Because you've been doing this forever. How long?
Yeah, have you been doing this for a while. One, watching them do the processing, but I'm also trying to learn how they process so I know how to engage with them. And so when the one kid, the different young man, I had spoke to his mom, when he got on, I was going to show him a different math trick, but then I realized that he wasn't quite there yet the way that he was processing. So then I just wanted to focus with him with those numbers, that those large numbers that ended in zero. And then I only wanted to focus on him understanding that when you multiply times one, you always get that number. So where I was going to go with that, I stopped and just dealt with those two things first.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to learn what their learning style is and how they process. But I also want them to be comfortable with healthy struggle.
Yeah.
And if a student or an adult is trying to work on someone and someone is over their shoulder like, oh my God, hurry up. It's so uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable.
And it pressures you into having anxiety. And when you have anxiety towards something, you're not going to make the best decisions. You're not going to be able to think.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
I am a witness to that.
Right. Yes.
My own life.
Yes.
Well, yes, I felt all of that going on when you describe what was going on. It just rings 100% true with what was going on. And, you know, when we hear about teachers need to be present for their students, it was so beautiful to watch you being present for your students.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Because we all need living examples. You know, we can understand a theory. Yes. When we have a living example,
right?
You know, it's just like theory and practice, right?
Yeah, they don't always collide, right?
No, they do not. No, yes. It's just I'm at a point now where if you're not going to show me what you're telling me, I need to go find another source. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You know, so I just, you know, thank you, Asada, for that. Yes. That dimension of yesterday. one thing, another thing, another of the many things that I watched yesterday that I went, what? You're having kids counting on their fingers, which was just appalling when I was growing up, you know? Why was it appalling? So,
I mean, think about babies, right? When you first have children, what do? They touch everything. They put everything in their mouths, right? But the very first thing, we work with our hands. Yeah. And that is the least abstract thing that we have. Right. And for it, things may be simple to us, but for children, a lot of this stuff is abstract.
So abstract.
And so we want to make it real, you know, so that, okay, you got 27 in your head, right? Now count up by adding 5, 28. Those are physical things that they can touch and it becomes concrete. And then we can transfer over to start moving over towards other things. But whatever it takes to make sure that they're first understanding it on some level. So if they can't understand or they don't know it yet, then scale it back to the point of where they get it and then take them forward. So if that means counting on their fingers, then so be it.
So be it. And then I saw you for maybe an older child. Mm-hmm. You were trying to say, okay, now what's 4 minus 4? And they were just, it was crickets, totally quiet. Yes. And then you said, all right, making it, taking it from the abstract to the relevant again, the concrete. Yes. If you have $4 and I take away $4, lights went on.
Yes, right.
So you did that again. You took it and I, for me too, it was just like a whole world of abstract became.
Yes, yes. Because, you know, they understand treats and they understand money, right? So they know if they have a certain amount of money, you come and take it all, right? Whereas 4 minus 4, just in the language of that, and then you can use it interchangeably with them. And so as you use the language and show them in a concrete way, then it'll be easy for them to pick it up abstractly. Yeah.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. But the first time that he answered that question, do you remember his answer?
Yes, I was right. He said nothing in Jesus.
You said, so I take away, you have 4 and I take away 4. What do you have left? He said, God and Jesus. That's right.
Oh my God, they're so hilarious.
Oh, but it was so beautiful because, yeah, that's right. You've always got that at least. That was a very sincere answer for him.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Wondering why we were laughing.
Right.
I loved that.
Yes.
So, okay. Another area of yesterday's class session that you rattled my cage, yanked my chain, was teacher was having them do this. The numbers were 19 times 5. And then there were these boxes.
Yeah.
And I was like,
right.
And then you said, don't do it that way. Here, do it this way. And then you showed the kid how to do it. And then you said, all right, now go ask your teacher why.
Right.
Right. Yikes, I got in so much trouble. So I'm sure that's not the first time you've advised a kid to ask why.
Because what happens is, one, we're using, you know, this, whatever the curriculum is that we're using and this common core stuff. And so much of it is extremely abstract. And I have yet to find, and I do things with computer code and cryptocurrency, I have yet to understand why some of this abstractness for as long as I've been doing teaching, right? And even when you're programming a computer, you're not using boxes and doing all of those things. If it's going to make it easier, then fine. But let's say even if you introduce it, it should not be a requirement that all students do it that way. Right. Let them do the way that is most comfortable for them. Right. And so there's absolutely no reason to do that. That would be something that I would just introduce as a way to do something. And students that want to do it, they can. And if not, you don't have to. Yeah.
I found myself getting stressed and afraid for the student because I got in trouble because I was a big why asker, because mm-hmm. I needed those reasons. I needed right. to understand why. I think kids
and
do.
That's what school is supposed to be. It's a learning place, and you can't learn if you're not asking questions, and you can't challenge what is being presented to you, because otherwise you're just being taught to regurgitate information
and dogma.
And that's not learning. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Painful. I barely got out of high school. High school, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought I was stupid for a very, very long time, you know.
Yeah.
And then, but it was so weird because really smart people liked being my friend, and that didn't make any sense at all.
You were a thinker, right? Exactly.
Yeah, a yes. thinker. Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. And so that's what you're turning these kids into with this math. So
yes.
it's almost as if math is just a path.
Right.
Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yes, it is absolutely a path to a few things. One, in being inquisitive, you know, there have been times in history where learning was really exciting and fun. And the concept of thinking on your own, right, was something that was seen as great. So that's one of the things. There's a beauty in that. Mathematics is the language of the universe. You can go anywhere in the world and write out certain problems, computations, what have you, and you can relate to anyone, kind of like music, right? And so that's one of the things. But the other thing is that, and I specifically talk about working with Black students, but this works for everyone. In West Virginia, where I have the program at, one of the young kids that loved the program so much that mom was like, I'm going to start bringing his little brother as well, is a white kid, right? So it ain't that it's just for Black students, but what it's doing is, if you look in West Virginia, right, that was a coal producing state, which is going out. Cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, and all that type of stuff is coming in. That's where our society is changing. So it also prepares them for what their world is going to be, one that we may not be able to imagine. Because when I was in high school, I did not imagine being able to have this little small device that we could talk on anywhere we are in the world. We can video chat. This whole idea of what we're doing now, we didn't even think about this when we first sent our first email.
Right.
So we cannot imagine the world that our children are going to live in.
Right.
But what we can do is prepare them how to think no matter what it's going to be and how to contribute to that world and not just be a consumer. So right. that's what I'm using mathematics for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm going to get this course for Beth. I was just looking at it for, it looks like it's for teachers and adults.
Mm. Well, which one is that?
It's the one that you and Freddie are doing together.
Yeah.
Is that a course?
I think it's a handbook. Or Freddie and I are going to do, what do we have? I actually just got off the meeting with them. We're going to do a 5-day challenge coming up in April.
Okay.
And then we have professional development options that we offer for schools and different things like that as well. But he and I are also going to do a talk or something like that that's coming up as well.
Okay. I need to have all of that information when I upload this podcast.
Okay. I'll send that to you. Yeah.
Because this is freedom for everybody. And for me,
yeah.
this is definitely
yes.
self-interest going on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, really. Yesterday I saw one child start with you and say, I don't know how to do this. And the way you talked to her and she would come up with an answer and she said, are you sure about that? She said, yes. She said, you don't sound like you're sure. Let's hear it. Let me hear you say you're sure of it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, you know,
right.
And the way you coached her.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of that time.
Yeah. And then you see, she came back and she did a more advanced problem on her own.
She said, Mama, I want to do this on my own now. And she came back and
yeah.
she was teaching you.
Right.
My mouth was open the entire time. And she started out, who could imagine a child online?
Right.
People are complaining about teaching online and all
right.
it needs is a
yeah.
teacher that's present.
Yeah.
With techniques that are relevant.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And relevancy enlivens the mind.
Yes, absolutely.
It doesn't hurt the brain.
engages the brain. Not at all. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so I asked you that. Okay, I loved you have, I know, I've watched you several times on webinars and stuff, and you have all of these little, I don't want to say tricks, you have these approaches or these techniques, that learning techniques and opportunities to just get that learning into a category so it's a tool for you.
Yes.
How would you describe it, though? I want to make sure I get the right wording, you know, like.
Man, I mean, with the children, I use, you know, the term, you know, math tricks or whatever, but really what it is teaching them. They don't quite know what the lesson in it is yet, which is okay. Sure. But what is teaching them is to recognize patterns and cycles. Everything in life is about patterns and cycles. If you look at the political cycle, an economic cycle, if you look at weather, the life cycle, everything is about patterns and cycles.
Yes.
And so I'm wanting them to pay attention to those. So like the kid early, the kid I was working with the zeros, right? What a pattern is, when you have all of these zeros, you just multiply the non-zero numbers and then add however many zeros, right? Right. So I wasn't telling him specifically like that, but just by doing it repetitively, this repetition thing, we've gotten away with. Rote memory is good, you know? And so just starting to get them to recognize patterns, relationships, and cycles.
Right. There were just so many techniques that I will take with me forever. I also loved your little code for when you're doing division.
Yes.
DMSB.
Yes.
It can be daddy, mama, sister, brother.
Right.
Or it can be divide, multiply, subtract, and bring down.
Yes.
Or it can be Denny's, McDonald's, Subway, and Burger.
Right.
Any of those work.
Right. They, you know, we love our family. We love to eat, right?
Yeah. And you just get those tricks and then you don't need them anymore. You just need some little hooks in your brain.
Yes.
Do you like brain science? You seem to have a pretty good handle on that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's from years of reading, learning, and, you know, I may not be able to pinpoint where I learned everything from. And then practices, as you were speaking of earlier, you know, some people get caught in theory mode and they like being researchers, and other people, they may do things real well and not really have the backing of the research. And I like to combine the two, read, study, and then put it into action.
Yeah. And that's what I was seeing yesterday. I mean, all right. So, yeah, that was so great with Noah yesterday. Let's see.
Yes.
Turning math into dollars. Okay. Yeah, the way you reinforce the study skills for all the kids that were watching yesterday, I thought that was so beautiful, because you made the place that those kids that were just in silence observing, you made their place a legitimate space too. And that's such a wonderful thing, because sometimes when you're just quiet observing something, you can start to feel insignificant. You don't let that happen, Asada. For a smart person, you got a pretty big heart.
Thank you.
It's very wonderful to observe. It's like what a teacher needs.
Yes.
How long have you been teaching?
You know, I started volunteer teaching when I was 18. And when I was at Michigan State University. And from there, that principal just kept me there and, you know, kept going and been going ever since.
Yeah.
And so I ended up finishing my degree in mathematics and computer science, but stayed the education route.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yes. Yeah, I know for me with teaching, I was just trying to mend the damage that had been done to me by people that didn't appreciate that each person has their own way of learning.
Yep.
But somehow you intuited that. How do you suppose you got that intuition?
I think probably from not going the traditional route of being an educator, right? Huh. And so with me being in engineering classes, you know, engineering and mathematics, that's a huge part of it, trying to figure out problems. And so, you know, we would pull all-nighters sometime trying to get a program to run. With programming C++ and things like that. And so then when I got into the classroom with students, I started doing some of the things that I was doing in my engineering classes with these middle school students. And just going through the thinking process, having them, you know, break things, try to figure out things, dream big on, you know, how things can look differently. And so, you know, it's just always been a thing as far as always pushing thinking.
Yeah.
And allowing the freedom, you know, allowing that time to think. Because in engineering classes, we hear things like fail and fail often.
Yeah.
Right. But you don't hear that in schools. You know, you don't, the idea is to get the right answer. You want to see C's and not X's on your paper, right? So there's this fear of making mistakes that is taught, whereas mistakes are part of learning.
Yes.
So I think coming from a different background and not so much an education background, I'm sure that that helped a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is that thing of, what is it? The mindset, mindset thinking that Carol Dweck does.
Oh, yes. Geez. Yeah.
I know exactly okay, what we you're both speaking know what
of. You know, right.
Yes, I'll put I know a little exactly slide right. into this video, but
right.
there is that, but it's not enough because, you know, the longer I live, the more I see that it's the challenging times. It's the times when I get things wrong and I have to work my way back.
Yeah. And Joe Boyer talks about that as well in her Mathematical Mindsets book, right? The same thing. And she may actually be quoting Dweck on that. But there is learning, there are certain synapses that are triggered, right, when you get things wrong. And so, yes, that, but again, like I said, we don't teach, what we're transmitting to our students is that there's an anxiety when you get things wrong, it feels like you've done something bad.
Right.
That you're not smart or, you know, whatever it is. And then we don't value that students are going to learn at different paces and at different times. So we expect that when we teach long division for the day that everyone is going to leave there and know how to do long division. And if everyone doesn't learn all at the same time, then those that didn't are going to be penalized.
Right. As well as the teachers, if they don't get their standard. Oh, anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother story, right?
That's a whole other story. Yeah. So like I've seen your students who have come through these programs with you talk mm-hmm. about the lives that they have now, how they started out with you. And do you want to tell us some stories of kids that have gone through your programs?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, since I've been doing this, you know, for 25, almost 30 years now, I have quite a few students that have come through. I have one student who is now, his name is, he's Dr. Jason now. But he was a student similar to the kid that we had on when I said 4 minus 4, and he said he has God and Jesus left, right? Similar to that, where he had some dyslexia stuff going on and mathematics wasn't his strong suit. And when he was in public school, they wanted to test him. And what I picked up on quickly was that he loved making money. And so I would tailor problems towards the things that he liked. Average, you know, quote unquote, average student, but this young kid, you know, he went on to become a medical doctor and eventually wants to run his own hospital. I have a student that was in trouble, you know, on the streets in Chicago, getting in trouble all the time. And I pulled him like his sophomore year. It was like, hey, you're going to take the engineering class that I'm going to create. And so I was principal at the time. And of course, you can't pay an engineer to come into public schools and teach. Yeah. So as a principal, I started teaching that engineering course. And after the first year, you know, it was a lot on me as a principal and trying to, you know, lesson plan. I had him teach it as a senior.
Wow.
And I gave him a TA who was a junior. And they did not have another adult in there with them. It was a junior and a senior in high school. They had their own section. They gave homework assignments. They did lesson plans. They did the whole thing. Never sent down any students for behavior problems. They had about 20-some students in their class for the whole school year.
Yeah.
And both of them went on to become engineers. Tevin went to Indiana State. He now works for Lando Lakes. He's a supervising engineer for Lando Lakes down in Georgia. And Priscilla Agbo was originally from Ghana. And she went on to Stanford,
wow.
got her engineering degree. And she went back to Africa, I think Nigeria first, and then to Ghana. Yeah. So I have two other former students. One is actually now she's a teacher at one of the schools that I consult for, and she's the mathematics teacher, the best mathematics teacher on their team. And then another student, her sister actually, is she's a architect, and she's working on the Obama Presidential Library, not too far from here. So lots of stories of students doing fantastic, quite a few that went into entrepreneurship, because we did a lot with entrepreneurship. We started a stock investing class with students as well. So a number of them grew up knowing about stocks and things like that.
Fantastic.
So quite a few of them are doing quite well.
Yeah.
And, you know, a number went into STEM fields and entrepreneurship.
And so is it accurate to assume that mostly you were in Black schools with Black kids, or no?
Yeah, the only time that I wasn't was when I was in Michigan at Michigan State.
Okay.
And when I was working in their pre-college engineering program. And so those programs, there were some of the programs that the majority of those students were Asian, white, and then we had a program where we did for all Native Americans. When we did women in engineering program, it's probably about half and half white girls and Black girls in that program. So when I was in Michigan, the most diversity was there.
So I wonder if you want to speak to any of the inherited I can't mentalities that come with Black kids, with girls, with Native Americans, with whoever. What did you observe in the different situations and different kids' backgrounds that they brought to the classroom? Or could it be categorized like that?
And yeah, it can.
Okay.
White boys, Asian boys in particular, are going to be the more confident ones. The white boys are going to be more aggressive with it. You know, they're going to want to be the ones holding the pencil. If it's group, they're going to want to be the ones leading the group. They're going to be most active with putting the robotics together. Asian boys, the same type of thing, but they won't be as aggressive with it, right? Girls, doesn't matter. White girls, Black girls, what have you. Not the same type of go get it with these STEM fields, and much more I can't. And what's ironic about that is that 70% or so of teachers are women, right? So what we're actually doing is women are passing that I can't down to them, because we call on the boys more, we praise differently and more with the boys. And so families and teachers are passing that down to students. With Black students, the biggest difference is that resources. And so in Michigan, when I was doing a program and their parents are going to pay for enrichment, they're going to pay for tutoring, they're taking trips that matter, because then you understand how time zones change and different things like that, right? So the lived experiences are different. And so the biggest thing, resources. And then for those that don't have resources, or if they have a parent, or the parents have to work, you know, long hours in order to upkeep the household, so on and so forth, they also don't have that resource of having a parent to sit down with them and work with them. And so what that happens is you start to build up these gaps of things that students don't have. Now, they have some assets. There are always some things that students have, but those gaps start to build up over a period of time. So that's the biggest piece, is the resource. But across the board, boys tend to be more confident.
So you're getting parents, Black parents. I want to focus on that demographic now. Black parents with Black kids who come with these disadvantages that you just described. Mm-hmm. How do you talk to the parents, and how do you talk to the kids to reset their minds and their attitudes, because they're not going to suddenly have a job that they don't have to work, spend as much time at. What are you doing to help them over some of those humps?
Yeah. Unfortunately, what happens is those students that need it to most, we don't get as many in the program. It's almost kind of like, you know, once you vote one way on the ticket, you vote all the way down the ticket, whereas the same thing, once they're missing that, whatever it is that they're missing, it kind of goes down. So we tend to have, now there are some that we have that, you know, are really deficit as far in a real deficit as far as resources. But typically what I've seen, and if you noticed last night, quite a few of those students, they had the parents that were there with them.
Yep.
And so that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Because then those parents also make sure, even though some of them may be in a position where they wouldn't be able to pay a few hundred dollars a month to have the service, at least with it being free, they show up and they're there. And so that's a huge thing. And then the conversation I have with parents, the biggest thing is patience with your young people and make sure that you're getting them whatever resources that you can. A resource can be as easy as you just going up to the school. Everything isn't about money. Time is a valuable resource. And so putting in the time with your children. And as I said, being extremely patient, they can just make sure that they're there every week. That's huge for the parents. As it relates to students, it's more so about showing them and showing them what patience look like, what it's like to study, that I also make mistakes. So these are ongoing, you know, little tidbit conversations that I have with them. Okay, the reason why I'm having you to learn this right now is because when you get to college, so automatically putting that in their mind, right? When you get to college, you're going to use it in this way. And then we're breaking down a fear. So when you get to college, you're not concerned about, oh, what is the commutative property? Or, you know, it's not a fear to you. And then not talking down to them. If you notice, I use the language, okay, the dividend goes here, divisor goes here, the minuend, the subtrahend. This is the vinculum. It means to divide. But that language and vocabulary piece is also, and not where I have to make them write out vocabulary words and write it five times, but just using it all the
time.
Just
goes across their consciousness and it just,
right. Yeah, the same way babies learn, right?
Yep.
When they learn to start talking, we don't give them a book or have them write, we just start doing it.
Right.
And they pick up on it. So I do the same thing with mathematics. And then I don't over-assess. You know, we're not, okay, you're going to have a quiz, this and it. It's learning for the fun of learning. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. What else do I want to ask you? What else do you want to share with us?
Oh, I mean, you're doing a great job. You're going into it. I do enjoy it a lot. There is power in that, you know, and, you know, as you said a couple of times early, it's not just about Black students. I'm focused on Black students because, you know, it's triage, right? You go to the hospital, they're going to call back the person, you know, that has, you know, a stab in the neck versus the person that's coming in because their finger hurt, right? So I'm tackling where the most need is right now.
Yeah.
And there's, we're substantially down. If you look at the numbers, we make up about 15, 16% of the population. But we represent only about 5% of the STEM fields, grossly underrepresented. When you look at Asians, it's the reverse. Yeah. They make up about 5, 6% of the population, but 18% of STEM. So they're 3X, we're a third. That's a 9X difference.
Yeah.
It's like we're showing up to the game with one player and they're showing up with nine.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm wanting to hit that gap to get more Black students interested into STEM fields, because there's also a direct correlation to wealth. Because what's happening is Black college students, by default, 20% of them are choosing majors that will have them forever impoverished. So, and why is that? Because they're all non-STEM related. But if we start to go more so in the STEM fields, I mean, I look at the one student who I was talking about earlier, Tevin. He's, I think, 25, 26 now. He also married an engineer that's about 25, 26. Their first home was new construction. at 26 years old. Retirement accounts, investments accounts, it's a completely different outlook, right? On that type of salary versus if they were both working at a Walmart or an Amazon. Now life looks completely different for them.
And they're working against the whole structure of this country.
Yeah.
And the whole mindset that we're all swimming in, that's how it is. That's just how it is.
Right.
And what I love and honor about what you're bringing is that just, I saw the microcosm of it yesterday, where the little silos of thinking were just blasted out. And so enough of those experiences through the pathway of mathematics, because if I can do, that's not even an intellectual thing, but if I can do it with mathematics, if I can have that experience with something that seems so impossible, then what else is impossible that isn't really impossible?
Exactly. Right. And I like using the West Virginia example, right? Because that's the complete opposite of the population. It's like in some of those counties in the area that I was in, it's like 100% white county, right? 98, 99%. So different population, but the same thing applies, right? Because those children, they're not going to be mining coal. But what if we start teaching those children how to program smart contracts?
Right.
How to start building for the metaverse?
Right.
How to get a decentralized finance? Now they're not worried about where the jobs are going to be. The jobs can be wherever they want it to be because they can work for companies that are anywhere in the world. Okay. And so what I'm doing, as I said, it's, you know, my focus is on Black students. That's where there's a bullet in the head at, right? But this works for any child,
of course,
anywhere.
Of course.
And especially in places where we're wondering, you know, this industry is leaving, where are the jobs going to be?
Right. Yeah. And what that also is a cure for is those people trying to keep everybody in the past, dig out more coal, destroy more of the earth.
Right.
Because that's the only solution I see to my problem. Yeah. Oh, no, there are many more.
Many more. Right.
You didn't even know what you didn't know.
Exactly. Right. You're talking about mining coal. You have people that are mining Bitcoin right now.
Right.
Mining, you know, so mining now is a different look, but we're not preparing our students for those transitions across the country.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to that. I don't want to forget that I want to talk about that. So maybe you can, but I really want to ask about this. There was a kerfuffle sometime when you were trying to put Black Math Genius into a school, and then some people tried to keep it away. Was that in West Virginia, or where was that?
Yes.
Could you tell us that whole story, please?
Yeah. And one of the things I would say where my arrow was in it, and not thinking about the change in the population. Chicago, Illinois is very different than, you know, Charlestown, West Virginia. And so thinking of the rollout and me working better with the team, that would have helped more. But what it was that they had a concern with the name Black Math Genius. And they were, you know, the outrage was, you know, why is it a, you know, what if we had a white Math Genius program? And, you know, what are they going to be teaching critical race theory? And, you know, we don't want this program, and principals didn't want the posters in their program advertising for it. And are white students going to be able to get in? And are we spending federal monies on this? And it was a whole mess. I'm there doing professional development, and I go to the local Walmart to get some honey for my tea. I'm a tea drinker, and I'm leaving out, and I see a front page of the cover. It's the Black Math Genius program. I'm like, is that big? It's on the front page of the cover. So that was the whole thing. But what you get into is in this country, we're and probably across the world, you know, things that we don't understand, we automatically fear and then fight it.
Well, most people do.
Exactly. We don't understand it. That's what I say, worldwide.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't understand it. We fear it and we fight it. And so that's what it was. And so I told the teams, like, let's just chill out. calm down, see what it is that we need to do differently, what we can control. Because for everyone, it's not about racism. Racism is one form of ignorance, but it's not the only. Sometimes it's just naked ignorance, you know? And with some people, and also the other thing is, those that cause the most ruckus tend to be the loudest and get the most attention, right?
Right.
And so when I went back later and I had professional development with the superintendent and all of her principals, white, every single one.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal presentation. We did a 4-day professional development. I started off with reminding them of their why. If you asked 100 teachers across this country why they went into education, yeah, their answers are going to be very similar.
Yeah.
They care, they wanted to help children, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Here's what I guarantee you're not going to see on there. You're not going to see a teacher write, "I only want to help white children."
Right.
But somehow politics and everything pushes to where we give the impression that that's what. So once we got past the why, you know, thank them for their years of service, so on and so forth. It was really more so about, but here's your data. And your data is saying that Black students are struggling the most in mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And the behavior data says that they don't like being in the classrooms,
mm-hmm,
right? Now, that's facts. That's your data. Now, here's what we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it went well.
Of course.
Yeah. So there was no need in wasting and spending and having conversations and pointing fingers and doing all of that. This is the problem. Here's a way to solve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I want to do now is have you help us learn more about the program that you're offering, Black Math Genius. I want people to know about that. I want the world to know about it.
Yes.
I mean, it's truly, truly a gift.
Thank you. So the Black Math Genius program is called Black Math Genius Bootcamp, and it's a series of videos. And we start off with the parent or the teacher section, and it really kind of goes into morals, values, things that are still important, right? And it talks about
you're ways talking about math and your introduction.
Oh, absolutely, right.
It's about morals and values.
Absolutely, yes. You know, morals, values, principles, and how to engage with students for parents, right? We don't want to do things like, your brother got it, I don't understand why you can't get it, right? So we do that piece. We then move from there. We go into the historical context of mathematics. And we look at the Lobombo bone and the Ishango bone. These are two bones that were discovered in Africa that showed that it was Black people that were first doing mathematics. In fact, it's believed that it was a Black woman for over 40,000 years ago, tracking her lunar calendar. That's the earliest mathematical instrument that we have. And then it's not set up like a traditional curriculum. It's not this section of addition. It's more so topic based. So for instance, we'll do a section that is on currency, right? And it's talking about different currencies, from, you know, regular currency to cryptocurrency. There's a section in there where we talk about modular arithmetic. Modular arithmetic is really like telling time, like military time, right? Mm-hmm. If it's 1600 hours, that really means 4 o'clock, mm-hmm, because that's modular 12 mathematics. Mm-hmm. And that's important because modular arithmetic is a concept that's also used in programming, mm-hmm, right? With cryptography, so on and so forth. And so it's not specific, you know, traditional units that you're going to see like that. When we do a section that's called balance and order, because those are two principles of Ma'at. You want to have balance in life, you want to have order, right? Well, that's the same as dealing with order of operations and equations. There's order and there's balance. And really, order of operations, in order to solve equations, it is the opposite. It's order of operations in reverse. So equating those types of things, if you look at algebra, you know, we talk about the root of algebra, you know, an Arabic word. And you can tie that also into Malcolm X, right? When Malcolm X changed his name to X is because he was searching for his roots, right? Looking for the unknown. In algebra, what is algebra about? Finding the unknown. What variable do you tend to use? X, right? And so just relating it to, you know, those types of things. And then there's a programming section where they do some coding using Python. to code different projects, to code their own guessing game, to code their own calculators, to do a physics calculator, to program different shapes. Like there's this mathematician called Riki Mann out of South America, and there's a Riki Mann sequence. Well, they take that mathematics of that and they program it, because really where I'm wanting students to be able to understand three languages, to go from English to math to programming, right? And if they can go between those three languages, right? And of course we want them to learn other languages as well. We have a section on there where we talk about Kiswahili numbers, Roman numerals, Yoruba numerals. We talk about Spanish, of course, you know, and I think we do French as well, because part of, as you learn about other cultures, that's also a way of respecting other people, right? When you understand their culture, their language, the foods they like to eat, where they're located in the world, it broadens your horizon and you have more respect than if you're just in this, you're just in this isolated box here. So that's, you know, yes, it's mathematics, but it's all of these things, right? Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I wonder how many people have ever heard math described in that way,
right.
on the whole
yes.
planet.
Yes.
I love it. I yes. love it. Wonderful. So I will put up the information about how to purchase that program.
Because yeah, and it's easy. BlackMathGenius.com. They can go there, and we're running a special on it right now. I think it's yeah. like 60-something% or so. That's off. Yeah. So, yes.
Yeah. And it's how many hours of learning?
It's quite a few. I'm not sure how many hours, but it's between 50 and 60 videos that are on there.
Oh, it's just incredible. Yeah.
Yes.
And okay. Anything else? I know that your time, you have to go someplace else now.
Yes. I mean, I think that's a wrap. That's about it for me, okay. Unless you have anything else.
Well, I do want to have another conversation with you about that paper that.
Yes.
Because when you said about respect and you tied
oh, Hashim and the Hotep.
Yes.
Yes, from respect to peace. Yes, absolutely.
And
yes.
I just want to say that when I started reading that, I haven't read the whole article yet or the whole piece yet. But when I saw that, one thing that was always hard for me is to understand how the people of Africa could be conquered in, you know, subjugated the way they could be by the Europeans. And now I understand, because their whole direction was peace and respect.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's just like a person, right? If you're a yeah. nice person, people tend to take advantage of. Yeah.
Right.
Same thing. Yeah.
Right. Right. But what I love is there's that power and that vibrancy and that life
yes.
and that ability to swing on that other vibration and frequency.
Yes.
But there was just a focus in the other direction. So
yes.
that's just helping me with a piece of understanding, you know, this thing we call life on planet Earth, really.
I know, right?
Yeah. So yes. I want to have that conversation with you.
Absolutely. You have my email and my cell number. So yes. whenever you want to schedule, that's fine.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And thank you so much. I appreciate it and enjoyed it. This was fantastic.
I loved it. I love it.
All right.
We'll be in touch.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yep.
Bye.
Okay. So just a quick reminder, you want to check out the show's notes to make sure you have the links to all of her information and her offers too. She's provides many really enriching programs and educational opportunities around math for students young and more advanced, and even for us grown-ups. All right, thank you again for being here. Until next time.